Blog Talk Radio.
And now, welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio with your hosts, Jeff Lohman and Daniel Evans. That was horrible. Welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Lohman. I am joined by Daniel Evans. Dan, I thought we said we were going to fix that. I guess we didn't get to it. So you know what? What the hell? If we're going to have a crappy intro, let's really, really, really have a good intro. Let's restart. Welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Lohman. Sitting next to me is Daniel Evans. Let's get it on.
The story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
God, that is such a better intro. Anyway, welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio. Let's get right into it. We got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. We are taking your calls all night long. To give us a shout-out or a call, 323-642-1216. Again, that is area code 323-642-1216. Don't be bashful. Feel free to call in and give us a ration of shit. Or if you want to call in and talk hockey, that's what we're here to do. Last night in the NHL, we had a whole bunch of games. Tampa Bay, 4-1 over Buffalo. Montreal, 4-1. 4-2 over Boston. Ottawa, 5-4 over Toronto in a shootout. Florida, 7-1 over Philadelphia. Jaromir Jagr, 2 goals. Let me repeat that. Florida, 7. Philadelphia, 1. Jaromir Jagr, 2 goals. New York Rangers, 5-2 over Columbus. Washington, 5-3 over New Jersey in a game that Brooks Orpik got hurt in. Detroit, 4-3 over Carolina. Minnesota, 4-3 over St. Louis. Nashville, 2-0 over Edmonton. Chicago, 4-1 over the New York Islanders. Colorado, 6 over Dallas, 3. Calgary, 3-2 over Vancouver. Arizona, 2-1 over the Penguins. It still doesn't sink in with me. And over in the Pacific, we have San Jose, 2-0 over Anaheim. Tonight, we have Montreal and Ottawa. They are currently getting close to finishing up the second period, and Montreal is up 2-0. There's a couple other news and notes. Buffalo's goal starter, Lerner, is going to be out 6 to 10 weeks with a ankle sprain. I've never in my life ever seen anybody that was out 10 weeks with an ankle sprain, so there's got to be more to that. So Dan Bylsma, that chump jerk that he is going to have to figure out a way to fix their goaltending. Boston's test, Brad Marchand, is going to be out for the foreseeable future with a concussion. Also, 28 of the 30 NHL teams last night hit the ice Saturday night. 10 games were tied or within one goal during the third period. 10 teams scored 3 or more consecutive goals. And getting to something very interesting, right before we came on, via my contacts, and we're going to go to Dan here in a second to get his thoughts, there's big news coming out of the Los Angeles area, and the news is that the Los Angeles Kings are currently in discussions with the Toronto Maple Leafs for acquiring the services of one Dion Choke Phaneuf. Whether or not you like Phaneuf and you think that's a good move, or whether or not you think that Toronto paid too much for Phaneuf and they're just trying to unload cap, that's one thing. But the other stuff that we have going on is Calgary is in talks with the New York Islanders to try to make a big deal because the Islanders need help desperately at this point. Even though it's 2 games into the season, the Islanders need some defensive help, and maybe Calgary can help out. You want to talk about Dion Phaneuf, or you want to talk about Toronto, if you want to talk about how maybe Brendan Shanahan's ruining Toronto along with Mike Babcock. No. And speaking of Mike Babcock, we have something later on in the show I like to call Happy Story Time with Mike Commodore. If you are unfamiliar with what this situation is, Mike Commodore used to play for a whole host of teams, but he played for Mike Babcock, and he is not a fan of Mike Babcock. He had some rather very interesting things to say in the last few days that really made me and Dan laugh a whole lot. Pretty funny guy. But anyway, Dion Phaneuf possibly going to the Kings. I don't know the terms. That's just what I've been told. You want to call in and talk some hockey, go ahead and call us in at 323-642-1216. As far as what we're going to talk about with the Pens, we're going to cover it all. The loss to Arizona, Jim Rutherford, Mike Johnston, Cullen plucking off Bennett Bonino. What could make the Pens better? Do we need to freak out, even though they've lost two games of the season, even though only one line is scoring? There's a lot of stuff to cover. So, with that being said, Dan, what do you think as far as Dion Phaneuf? Is that a guy that you go after and get, or is this more of a symbol that Los Angeles needs more help than they thought they would? Because, look, they went out and signed Christian Ehrhoff, I believe, thinking that he was going to tie up that loose end on the back end. But as you're saying, that's not the case.
Well, we got to watch the Kings the other night. For a lot of providers, including the one that Jeff and I have, center ice is a free preview for the next couple of weeks. And honestly, they need help on defense when it comes to the LA Kings. And right now I see this as a little bit of a cry for help, but also a cap area as well. Mm-hmm. They thought that Ehrhoff was going to be the end-all, be-all. Well, guess what? That isn't, to say the least, the case right there in Southern California. And right now, you look at Toronto, who's right now their current trade partner possibly, and they're going through absolute misery at this point. I mean, their first game, I believe, was against Detroit, which we'll touch on later because Commodore had some fun. And last night, they went into a shootout, which is a good thing, but still lost. So you have two teams that really need help right now to get into a little bit of positioning. So this could help Toronto in one sense when it comes to the word rebuilding. But the other side of that coin is the Kings are desperate to try to get into a very crowded Western Conference fight right now because it's only going to get crazier out West as the year goes on. And as the season wears on, you have to look out for San Jose. You have to look out for the Ducks and a whole host of other teams, including St. Louis and Chicago. So this is a move that could help, but also hinder as well.
It definitely could do either one. Excuse me. Boom gas. No, it could definitely or hinder. But I think at this point in this stage of the game, I think it's incumbent to say, I don't think Dion Phaneuf is going to be the answer to the Los Angeles Kings problem. And here's the whole problem. We're two games into the season, and there's some teams that are absolutely freaking out. One of the teams that is probably not freaking out, but they should, is the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to start the show by saying this. A lot of people seem to think that I'm way too critical of the Penguins and that Dan's too critical. Well, let's look at history for a minute, shall we? History says you are doomed to repeat it if you make the same mistakes. I challenge anybody. Call in. Call us tonight, 323-642-1216, and tell us that the Penguins are different. Now, we could sit here for the next hour and 20 minutes and debate whether the Penguins are good or bad or indifferent. But I think the best way to do this is to say this. Are the Pittsburgh Penguins good? No. Are they awful? No. Do they need work? Absolutely. But can they do it with what they have? And I think the answer is no. And I have my reasons for saying that. They lost against the worst team in the league from last season in Arizona. Now, I watched that game while dealing with a personal issue. And what I really noticed was the Penguins came out flat in the first period. And that's an issue, and that's been an issue for three seasons now. This team they had the whole day off. They canceled practice. They had no reason to be tired. I said prior to that game, just like I said prior to the Dallas game, clog the neutral zone, trap the boards, don't let them break out. What do the Penguins do? everything I said that they would do, which was do none of that. And the end result was the Penguins lost. Now, a lot of people seem to think the Penguins played a great game. I don't think that's the case. They got beat in almost every single category on the ice. Don't tell me that the Penguins played a great game when they got beat in every category on the ice. Now, they're 0-2, and we're going to get to that topic. Let me riddle off some stats. Oh, and by the way, this is going to be important going forward in this radio show. The Penguins are negative $160,000 in cap space. They have no cap space. Last night of the power play, the Penguins were 0-4. Arizona was 0-4. The Penguins got out hit 25-22. They did win in one category, and they won 35 faceoffs. They lost. I'm wrong. I'm reading my own handwriting. Pittsburgh lost in faceoffs 25-31. Giveaways, Penguins 5, Arizona 2. Takeaways, Penguins 5, Arizona 4. Blocked shots, 22 for Pittsburgh, 11 for Arizona. Penalty minutes, 12 for Pittsburgh, 14 for Arizona. Shots, 28 for the Penguins, 39 for Arizona. Need more stats? Mike Smith, 28-29, 964 save percentage. Marc-Andre Fleury, 37-39, 9.49 save percentage. So if you look at the stats, at least the important ones, I don't think we consider block shots and penalty minutes or takeaways to be that big of an issue. So the point is, and there's a lot of points that are going to happen in this, and this is going to upset a lot of people tonight, because there are some points. And I know that Jack Mullett does not like Corsi stats. He doesn't buy them, and that's fine. I agree with him. I think Corsi stats are bullshit. However, I do have some stats that make perfectly accurate sense, and then some. And it's based on 5-on-5 possession numbers. Because if I were to ask you who the worst defenseman on this team is, you might give me a name. And if I ask you why and you explain why, maybe you'd be shocked to find out that the Corsi supports that. Although I will tell you that the numbers looking in front of me, right in front of me, it's not who you think it is. So, Dan, what did you think of the game?
Okay, I was watching the game as objectively as I could. And to use a reference that Jeff loves to hear from my mouth every day that we talk, which is every day, I felt like old school George Steinbrenner in the middle of a Yankees collapse and he's about to lose his shit. You know, and he just gives you this look like, oh, fuck. You know, here we go. You know, we have four of the top players of the NHL, five of the top of the whole entire league on this team. And on this road trip, two-game road trip to start the season off, they have managed 1 point. Yeah, one goal. That's it. And they made Arizona, of all teams that are rebuilding right now, they made them look like playoff contenders. And to see people say, relax, this is only the second game. Okay, I'd like to have a little bit of a retort here, if I may. And that is, yes, it was only the second game, but the symptoms, however, have been going on for the last 3 years. Even back during Dan Bylsma, we had the same symptoms. You know, cancel practice for an off-site workout for about 30 minutes and then call it a day. And this is after being shut out by Dallas the night before. Let that sink in for a minute. You just got shut out, so you're going to cancel practice and do an off-site workout for 30 minutes, call it a day, do some sightseeing, grab some good food, and just have a small little, have a little practice before the game, day of game. And everything is supposed to be A-okay, right? Wrong. Absolutely flat out wrong. I take nothing away from Kessel's goal. It was a sweet takeaway that turned into a really good breakaway goal. But that was the highlight of the ninth right there for the Pittsburgh Penguins. You would think that Kessel's first goal as a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins would motivate this team. You would think that after what Shane Doan did to Chris Letang last season, that we would have some things to say to Shane Doan, but no. We waited until about a minute or so left in the entire game. Really? I'm appalled. And that's a good way of putting it. I'm flat out appalled by last night. I could not do a game write-up because I would have been accused of being too emotional by people. And you know what? I would love to have this type of emotion go through the team right now and let them realize that, hey, we're playing for our jobs here. We need to start acting like it and doing it on the ice and not just at fucking practice.
Tell us how you really feel, Dan. Jeez, you know what I feel like saying to you, Dan?
I wanted to kill Fargo, but you were too smart for that.
They have nothing on us.
I don't you.
Book him, Dano. Fargo, pull the switch. I've got to get out of this concrete box to see if I can pick up that bleeper.
Book him, Dano. You're saying a lot of the things other Penguins fans are saying today. I've got a whole list of shit that they've said from the Penguins site, which I forgot to pull up on the monitor, which I'm going to do in just a second. Because oftentimes people tell us we're crazy and that we're not watching what's really happening. The boards are open. You can call us in at 323-642-1216. We are taking calls. But before we click in to that, let me get to some of these statements. Some of them are long. I'm going to have to paraphrase. We're going to use first names here. And this was via the Pittsburgh Penguins NHL site. This was from a Conan. I don't want to say his last name. My impressions. Team can't pass the puck to save their lives. Arizona's young guns were passing better than we were. The team can't get the puck out of its own end half the time. They just half-assedly flip the puck and hope it goes out every game. This so-called scoring depth we had needs to get its game together. If Johnston plays one more game with Mata paired with Lovejoy and Scuderi playing over Clendening, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. Also, Lovejoy was the main reason the two goals happened. Instead of boxing out his man, he decided to play the goalie randomly, and his man was right there to shoot it in alongside unguarded. Fleury was the only player actually performing right now. I agree with him. I think he's absolutely right. I think Marc-Andre Fleury is the saving grace of the Pittsburgh Penguins at this point. And I agree that Scuderi and the mistake,
Lovejoy,
shouldn't be in this lineup. This is from Frank in South Carolina. My three impressions, Sid is being way too passive and looking for Phil Kessel on every shift instead of dictating the play and attacking the net. He needs to go back to his 50-goal season form and drive the net. Good things will happen when he does. The second line was non-existent as usual. Other than Hornqvist trying to agitate people three times his size and getting his ass beat for it, what was everyone else doing? Gino had moments of fantastic solo efforts, but per the usual, never looks to pass. Wow. The new third line, I looked good tonight. Dropping Plotkinov to that line seemed like it gave us a jolt of energy. There also seemed to be a little chemistry with Bonino as well. For having such a positive impression from our coaching staff about our great mobile puck-moving defenseman, we sure do spend a lot of time in our own end unable to get the fucking puck out. We spent what seemed like the entire first period trying to figure out which direction we need to take the puck in. Finally, for the love that is all my sanity, get Gino on the top power play unit and stop screwing around. You don't need two units when neither one can score. Dave, head honcho of – okay, I can't read that because that's from his business. The Penguins currently have three problems. First, Coach Johnston's insistence that Kunitz belongs on the first line is a joke. Youth and speed have taken over the NHL, more so than any other time in the past 40 years. Kunitz lacks hands, lacks feet, lacks intelligence and speed. His presence on the line one disrupts the flow. It's hard to reconcile Kunitz's presence on the scoring line where there's so many other wingers with more offensive pedigree. Second, so far, the team has been dreadful on the offensive entry. See, I disagree with him there completely. I don't think they're bad. They're dumping and chasing, and I don't think that's a bad system to play. So I don't agree with him from that. But the third problem is Sidney Crosby. Two games, no shots on goal, zero shots attempted. Currently, over the past two seasons, Sid has seen his skills leave. Now, that's one thing that we've talked about for a long time now. And we've got one more. This is why we have a tendency to laugh a lot, because people accuse us of being pessimistic, but these things are coming directly from people who watch the game to us and the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were dominated most of the night by a lowly DFL, and I'll let you figure out what DFL is. Finishing bottom dweller Coyotes. More disturbing was how average Sid and Malkin looked. Kind of look like they are intentionally not trying very hard. Are the veteran players taking to get a better coach? Maybe. The defense and power play looked retarded. Basic things like proper spacing on the ice, they just couldn't get right. But that's on the coaches. Malkin and Sid are experienced enough to know the team cannot win with Johnston. And now they seem to be playing just like that. Now that's a lot to swallow. And, Dan, I'm sure you have your thoughts about all those comments. What do you guys think? Do you think comments like that are half-based? We've been saying we're not even that brutal. These people are brutal, but yet they want to lop us in with them. So I guess, you know, that's all good. If you want to call in 323-642-1216. Now, we can talk about the comments, or we can just talk about what we saw. The choice is really yours.
I'd like to do both. I'd like to give them a floor as well as...
Okay. The overall comments, and I'm not going to go person by person by person. I think the general consensus seems to be that Penguins fans seem to believe Mike Johnston is the problem. They seem to want to blame it on Crosby. Mm-hmm. They want to blame it on Malkin. They want to blame it on Plotkinov. But there's a name they're leaving out. And this whole entire spiel, every single paragraph, every single, like, hate mail we got about this, nobody mentioned Jim Rutherford. Not a single person. And what people need to understand, or David Morehouse, and what people need to understand is that Mike Johnston is given what he's asked. But do you think that Mike Johnston said, you know what, Jim, don't worry about it. You don't have to bring me in a guy to replace Paul Martin. You think that's what he would say? I don't think so either. And that's one of the problems. And we're gonna get to the defense and to the offense and everything else. Here's my impression from the game last night. My impression is I thought they came out flat. They had spurts in the second period where they looked energized. And really the third period, I thought they looked okay. They looked like they had some life. They got a lot of good shots, but it just wasn't enough. 2-1 is not a bad way to lose a game. However, when you systematically lose the same games the same way, and this goes back three seasons now, then there's a problem. And I'm not saying that 2-0 is desperation time either, because like I said, anything can change. But the problem with this team specifically is the focal point seems to be on we want a high-scoring offense, we want a passive defense, we'll outscore everybody, we'll be fine. And it didn't work under Bielsma. It didn't work under Therrien. It's not going to work now. So... from my perspective, out of 10, I think the Penguins played about a 4. I think the problem of only having one line scoring is a serious issue. It was the same issue last year. And we're going to get to that because I think that's something we really need to discuss tonight. But what I mainly want to know right now from you, because we know what the defense is, at this point in the game, I mean, is it time to panic or is it just time to say, you know what? Shit's got to change, and it's got to change in a hurry. Which one is it?
I wouldn't even say, to my vast knowledge, a thing that shit has to change or else heads are going to roll or else fans will stop attending games to some extent. I would not even call that a state of panic. I would call that the reality of things. Think about it for a minute. when you have a contender year in, year out, but then management starts making moves, but doesn't do the proper addition versus subtraction, then problems arise. Is there a replacement on this team at all on defense that was brought in that could even measure up to what Paul Martin did for this team alongside Christopher Letang? No, sir. Not at all. And this whole one-line scoring and everything's going to be okay nonsense was last year in a nutshell. And if not for Marc-Andre Fleury standing on his head for 52 games, guess what? This team doesn't make the postseason because Greiss wasn't as good as Fleury and never will be as good as Fleury. But what we're seeing is the same thing, the same symptoms. And it's not just the players, it's the coaching staff, and it's also management. You've got Morehouse as executive president, who's more concerned about media relations than he is in politics. And everything he's done in politics has been an absolute failure, but that's a discussion for another night. Then you have Jim Rutherford, who destroyed the Carolina Hurricanes to the point where it's going to take a while for them to recover from the damage that JR did. Owners aren't even saying we need to clear trades. They're saying just clear them through Morehouse. So what you have here is the blind leading the blind, and then being put onto the shoulders of the coaching staff to fix with a system that does not work at all. Point blank, end of story. And just think, Tuesday night, wow, guess who's coming to town for the home opener? Montreal is. What do you think the odds are of winning with one line scoring and Fleury or Zetkov in net? And do you think that one goal is going to be enough to knock off Montreal with the way this team plays? Nope. Is really going to quickly hit, and it's not going to be pretty. But the dynasty of playoffs that the Penguins have been to since 2006-07 could be very well coming to a close very, very quickly.
We are only two games in the season.
I know, but...
Okay. That's a point I want to make. We are only two games into the season. And the Penguins aren't a dynasty. A dynasty wins.
That's right.
This is not a dynasty. You want to go back to the two cup wins? Sure. This, not a dynasty. And we're two games into the goddamn season. It frustrates me.
Yeah.
Because we're two games into the season, and people want to act like this team is a massive failure and nothing can be accomplished. And I'm here to tell you it can. But we also have to talk about the negative aspects of this. Now, I'm just going to ask you off the mic for a minute. Who do you think the worst defenseman on this team is?
Tie between Skinnerian and Lovejoy.
How would you react if I told you that that's not even close to being accurate?
Ooh, who would be the worst, sir?
Okay, so the question to Dan was, who do you think the worst defenseman on this team is possessionally 5-on-5? And he said either Lovejoy or Scuderi. The worst player on this team is Olli Maatta, defensively. And second, Dumoulin is the worst at 34. Dumoulin is tied with Lovejoy for worst at 34. Maatta is the next worst at 36-17. Then Scuderi at 45-31. Cole at 52-78. And Tanger at 55-12.
Ooh.
What that is that's 5-on-5 possession stats. So everybody that's screaming about Scuderi being the worst, even though visually he looks the worst is Dumoulin, followed by Maatta, Lovejoy, then Scuderi. Mata's had an awful season. He hasn't been good.
No, he has.
And that's a big problem. And I think some of it has to do with being timid about your shoulder. But guess what? You're in the NHL, boy. It's either play or go to the A, and that's just the way it needs to be. Now, defensively speaking for a minute, the big problem this team has, and I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about this because we have talked about this for months, not two games now, for months. This team is way too passive. Agnew has been playing a system that is not going to spell out wins. It's going to spell out losses. And I'm right with Dan when I say you got Montreal coming in who've got, I think, quite possibly, and my pick for the Eastern Conference Stanley Cup Finals against San Jose. And I think Montreal is the real deal this year, and we're going to get to that question in a minute. Elaine Savage, if you're listening, call in, 323-642-1216. Talk to me about Montreal since you're from there and you're a huge Habs fan. Carey Price is the best goalie in the NHL. If the Penguins can't score against fucking Arizona, what in the hell makes you think they could score against Montreal? P.K. Subban's coming in town. Max Pacioretty.
Two of the best in the game.
There's just no way. But I don't want to get to that. I just wanted to basically say that defensively, two games in, not necessarily panic mode, but definitely getting the contractions in your stomach mode, which is then going to be onset by diarrhea. And that's the problem, is now they're in a position where they're in the hole $117,000. They got two guys on LTIR. They've got a couple of guys that just don't really honestly look that good. And defensively, they're in trouble because I don't see them getting a whole lot better. And I don't say that because I think they're the worst defensive team in the NHL. I say that because Gary Agnew has them playing a style that's not going to suit them in the Metro. And unless they decide they want to be physical, it's I just don't see good things happening to this team defensively. Now, on the forward front, really, we're going to talk about something. And I'm going to bring this up again. And it has to do with Jim Rutherford. And I'm going to make it crystal clear for everybody. And if you don't agree, you can call in and talk smack if you want. 323-642-1216. Jim Rutherford has essentially done the same exact thing he did in Carolina. He essentially has done the same exact thing he did last offseason when he brought in Daniel Winnick, Perron, Klinkhammer, Arcavello, Craig Adams. Do I need to keep going on? Now, Nick Spaulding had 25 points.
Correct.
Steve Downey had 25 points. Now, Spaulding didn't work well because they kept putting him on the fourth line. Downey got too many penalties, so they told him to beat it. And yet you trade a first-round pick for Daniel fucking Winnick. And he's so fucking atrocious, Toronto took him right back. Which tells me Toronto's not really trying to get any better. Because you go out and sign Winnick at 2.5 for 2 years. Is Gordie Howe still available? Can they sign him? My point is that he went out and made those moves. He did nothing but he traded Simon Dupre and brought us Lovejoy. And we got Ian Cole for Robert Bortuzzo. Now, we can argue those moves, but look at those moves. It's a pattern, folks. He also told Niskanen to go fuck himself. He told Brooks Orpik to go take a boner pill and go find somewhere else to play in the sandbox. And then he tells Martin, we're not going to pay you shit, so you might as well go, boy, I do want to talk to you about a contract. And Paul Martin says, well, all right, then, you know, maybe we can deal with it. Well, fuck you, I don't want to talk right now. Next thing you know, Paul Martin signs like a 3-year deal for less than what he was making here originally. So what I'm and this is going to get even better, and I'm going to let Dan have a run at this. 323-642-1216. He signs Cullen. That's a sign that you don't make out of the gate. That's a sign that you make when Pascal Dupuis goes down and you need a guy to cover for like 3 or 4 games until Eric Fair can get into the lineup. Or he's a guy you add right towards the end of the playoff push. That's not a guy you sign out of the gate. Nick Bonino. I thought he was a good player. I'm apparently very, very wrong. He's great at the face-offs, but here we go. This is what we're seeing again. Max LaPierre all over again. Great at face-offs, invisible everywhere else. He's like a sperm ghost with no hat. You know? So what I'm saying, folks, is that essentially Jim Rutherford has done the same exact fucking thing he did last season. The only difference is he brought in Phyllis Kessel. And I like to call him Phyllis. I'm not making fun of him, but I like to call him Phyllis Kessel because my other nickname for him all last year was the Walrus. And we can go with that one. We can go with the Walrus. I got a great pic, a great meme of him like looking like a walrus. Kessel's unreal. He's a good player. But the problem is Johnson's not matching the lines. And I'm not sold. Basically, and Dan brought this to my attention this morning. I think I was drinking coffee. And he said, you know, boss, the way it works is we essentially really only have one line. Plotkinov has no fucking idea what country he's in. He's used to skating on the huge ice surface. Well, he just looks lost. Malkin is dipsy doing his usual stuff. Rutherford's done essentially the same thing. And I've talked too long. I got to let Dan take it over. But seriously, Dan, lighten these motherfuckers up a little bit about what Rutherford's done.
All right. Am I Nancy McConaughey voice? All right, all right, all right. Okay, kids. Let me break this down for you in a way that could really make you cringe tonight. Plotkinov, you can put together any video you want of any player and put it on YouTube and make it look like they're the next big thing out of one organization that when they come to the NHL, they're going to have an immediate impact and you're going to fucking love it. Wow. You know, it's no different than people putting together their favorite people at a juniors or college or high school or whatever and saying, you know, this person's going to be big on a Saturday night or a Sunday afternoon or whenever. It doesn't compute at times. One of the problems with this team, and it's been a problem now going on at least two seasons, if not three, is a lack of chemistry. Kunitz up on the top line. Let me use this as the perfect example. He's not as fast as he used to be. He really isn't. Have you seen him? Have you seen Kunitz with Crosby and the Warless, Phil Kessel? Crosby and Kessel are literally darting down the ice. And sadly, Kunitz doesn't have that speed that these two guys have. When you think about it, on the top six, there are three players that are really giving it their all, 115%, or at least trying to, that could comprise a line. That would be Hornquist, Crosby, Kessel. That's it. That would be your top line. But from the second line down, really, it's got so many holes to it. And when it comes to the cap, we're in the negative. So Jim's going to have to do something about that. This is just spelling disaster. And we can all be told, well, we should have done this. We should have done that. Oh, and Dupuis injured again. But here's the catch, though. Dupuis hardly played in the preseason, got injured getting ready for the trip to the West Coast to get ready for this season. He's out 4 to 5 weeks. And I love Dupuis. But Dupuis would have only done but so much. Eventually, you have to change the dynamic of your team. Eventually, you have to slowly drift away from the older players and build up youth and speed for a new core. Because here's something that kids don't want to hear, but I'm going to say right now. Crosby, Letang, Fleury, Malkin, Kessel, they're not getting any younger. They're in their late 20s now. Actually, Fleury's already into his 30s. But as your body gets older, it tends to break down. That's what's going on with, God bless him, Chris Kunitz. He's getting a little bit older, so his speed isn't what it was when we signed him in that trade that when we got him from Anaheim all those years ago. The same thing goes with Dupuis when he comes back. He's in his mid-late 30s. The speed that he had when we got him from Atlanta isn't there as much as it used to be. Think about it, my friends. I'm not putting down the team. I'm just saying you have to add in youth and speed and skill and start a new core, because we're all on borrowed time. We all are. But in sports, no matter what sport, the body takes a tear. And hockey is a physical, demanding sport. And with Rutherford, it's the blind leading the blind. I really don't know what planet he lives on, to be honest. But that's the nuts and bolts. The team's getting older, and the youth just isn't quite there. So you got to make moves. JR, as much as you think that you're not in the hot seat along with your coach, guess what, sir? You bet your ass you are.
All good points. And I think that, you know, from the standpoint of what I said, the Rutherford hasn't changed a lot. He really hasn't. He brought in Phil Kessel, and I think he was hoping that that would be just enough. But the theme seems to keep switching on us. In the first offseason, Rutherford was here. We want a high-powered offense with a physically intimidating defense. 2 weeks into the season, well, we want a passive defense and a high-scoring offense. How did that end? Bingo. This offseason, he says, I want a high-scoring offense. I want a high-scoring defense. We get here, no scoring offense, very passive, non-offensive-minded defense. So does some of this fall on Rutherford? If you guys want to call in and scream, 323-642-1216. You got to be patient because the board is lighting up. And sometimes we always don't notice it hopping up because we're looking at notes, looking at wires and everything else that's going on and the ticker. So if you want to call in, 323-642-1216. Wanted to give a shout out to Chris Holstrom, Kennedy, Rick Porter, Ron Korber, Heather Gaughan, who hasn't been feeling well. The list just goes Tommy Ettinger, Rohit Brahma, Haley Wright. The list just goes on and on and on. Right now, we're going to go to a final. Is it a final game break?
No, in the second period.
Okay, we're going to go to a game break really quick.
The home opener in Ottawa. It is at the end of the second period, and the Canadiens are leading the Senators 2-1. So you got 20 minutes left in that contest for Ottawa to make a last-minute push.
Welcome, Dano. Thank you very much, sir. So there you have it. So Ottawa's getting back. Got 20 minutes left to tie this game. But I want to talk about Mike Johnston for a minute. We have about 45 minutes. I know some of you are probably wondering what the hell this Mike Commodore thing is about, and I want to get to that. But I have to preface that by saying you're going to hear some very bad language come out of my mouth. Some of it is very bad, so if you have small children, hide them in the closet with the monsters and the witches and the goblins and the demons and your dust bunnies and
your gremlins.
And your gremlins and whatever else. Because some of the things he said, while I find hysterically funny, some people who are of certain religions may not. I believe Hitler, Stalin, and Babcock were in a room together, and there was a gun on a table, and only two bullets. And someone said, "Hey, commie, what do you do?" And he says, "Oh, I shoot Babcock twice in the nuts." So, that being said, if that's any indication of where we're going to go with Mike Comrie, we have a really, really, really unique way, especially if you're a horror fan, of how we're going to set up the Mike Commodore segment. So, if you haven't listened to any part of this show at all, you are going to want to listen to the Mike Commodore spot segment in this show. It's well worth it. If you want to go on Twitter, I believe it's at Commie22. C-O-M-M-I-E-22. And I'm sure he has still left it up there in what he said about Mike Babcock. That's going to be well worth listening to. But with 44 minutes left, you can call us in at 323-642-1216. Now, I want to talk about Mike Johnston for a minute. Now, let me just preface this by saying Crosby hasn't had a goal or a single shot attempt this season. So you know what people are naturally going to say is Crosby hurt. I don't think that's the case. But Mike Johnston has got to find a way out of this. He's got to find a way to be difficult. Did you really pull up the tweets of Mike Commodore?
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow. Are we going to go verbatim or are we going to paraphrase? Because some of them are quite nasty.
I just want to bring up one.
Okay. Okay, so Dan has one. You know, I tell you what, pull that up really quick. Point to the one, because I want to just make sure that it's not the anti-Semitic slash burn in hell, you fire-breathing pencil.
No, it's one about Thanksgiving, and he goes...
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. Oh, by the way, happy Thanksgiving to our Canadian friends, Kennedy and Haley and Tommy Ettinger and Rohit Brahma and all the guys that are Canadian. Happy Turkey Day, whether or not you're celebrating today or tomorrow. But anyway, what Dan's alluding to is something that Mike Comrie said. He said, happy Thanksgiving Day, except to Mike Babcock, who's a fucking jerk, or something to that extent. So we're going to get to that, but let's talk about Mike Johnston for a minute, because one of the problems that Mike Johnston seems to have is he looks like he's got, you know, deer in the headlights. Like, he doesn't know where to go. He doesn't know what to do. It reminds me of my dad. I hate to say this, because my dad used to have a look on his face when he was completely frustrated and didn't know what to do that just sort of said, whoa, what the fuck? But the difference is I knew what my dad was frustrated at. Johnston just looks lost. He just looks lost. We talked about this the other night. He just looks lost. I don't think his system's good. I really don't. But I don't blame him necessarily for the way this team is performing. Because at the end of the day, a coach instructs, the players play. Unfortunately, though, for Mike Johnston, if this sort of thing continues, which I'm hoping it doesn't, but if it does, he will very much be the guy who's thrown under the bus and run over about 15 times by Rutherford while he's driving dressed as the Michelin Man or the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Can you imagine him in that Stay Puft Marshmallow Man outfit from Ghostbusters? God, that's funny. You can call in at 323-642-1216. See, when you listen to the show, you get comedy, too. You get comedy, too. All right. So here's what we're going to do. Do you want to talk about Johnston for a minute? Okay. Here's what we'll do. We'll let you take the Johnston. We'll let you cover Johnston for a few minutes or for however long until you get it out of your system, because I know it's like a toxic plague you got to get rid of. And after that, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. Dan and I are going to step away, but we're going to play a WAV file from a horror movie, a very well-known horror movie, one of my favorites, that's going to describe Mike Commodore to a T. So I'm going to let Dan take over for a minute and talk about Mike Johnston for a second. Then we're going to get to the Mike Commodore situation, and we're going to talk about the NHL a little bit. And then we're going to round it out by talking about Montreal for on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're still listening, thank you. Feel free to call in. Seriously. 323-642-1216. I love how you guys call in and hang up after 3 seconds. You got to give me enough time to hit the on hold button to put you on hold. Christ's sakes. East Canadians, eh? Anyway, I hope you're eating turkey for Canadian Thanksgiving or poutine. I know a lot of guys like to eat poutine. I'm a huge poutine fan. Been to Canada a lot. I love Canada. Anyway, Dan, Mike Johnston.
Okay. Mike. I got to tell you, you know, I am not for calling for automatic terminations and stuff like that. I know that he wasn't the first pick to to be head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I honestly do get that. It's something that I covered back on our former website, actually, back when we had a blog, that, you know, this whole idea that, oh, well, Mike Johnson was always on our radar. No, he wasn't. It's a good way of lying about it, given the fact that the one that you should have contacted had you had fired Ray and Dan at the same time already had a job. Yeah, that would have been Laviolette. But I can tell you that when you do a job and you're told to either change things or you know you have to change things around, and you repeatedly go by the same old shtick, night in, night out, game after game, eventually you're going to get pulled aside. And you're going to be told point blank, look, things need to change. Your system needs to change. We didn't bring you in to lose games. We brought you in to win and to lead this team. Now, honestly, I would have done things totally different Friday, to be honest. Yes, I know we took a red-eye flight into Arizona from Dallas. I get that, okay? But it does not excuse the fact that we could have gone to a practice facility, had an hour of practice, and taught a lesson to these guys that going scoreless is inexcusable. Instead, canceling practice and basically going back to old habits that were inherited from your predecessor that you allowed to happen again last year. Do I hate Mike? Absolutely not. Do I think the hot seat's getting warm? Yeah, I do, actually. And I also think there's another hot seat getting warm. That's Jim Rutherford, as well as the rest of the coaching staff. Because eventually, ownership's going to get upset. And if ownership gets upset and demands change and it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter how early in the season it is, people will lose their jobs. We've seen coaches get fired well before the trade deadline for bad starts. We've seen coaches on plenty of other teams get fired a few weeks into the season. Why? Things didn't work out. The team came off to an awful start. Management thinks that it's time for a change, or ownership does, so they made changes. Look at Boston right now. Claude Julien still has a job for right now, but I guarantee you, if things keep getting worse, I would not be surprised if things get worse in Pittsburgh as they are in Boston, and things get worse in both cities. Johnston could be out of a job, but you know what? Correct me on this, Jeff. A third-round draft pick would all it would be to take a coach that's under contract currently, correct? Okay. Anyhow, Johnston is just as replaceable as anyone else. But sadly, to that point, you have to remember something in sports, and hockey's no different. The coaches will always get the shaft before the talent does. It's a pure point that has worked for years. Players, they get dressed down, but not after the coaches are gone. So, Johnston, we do like you as a person, but we're asking you, please, change things up. Because we want you to succeed, but we know that in order for that to happen, you have to make changes. And it had to happen pretty awful fast at this point, because that noose is only going to get tighter unless results start coming out.
No, I agree. I think, you know, Johnson's going to be on a very short leash. And the longer that this skid goes, I mean, if they lose in Montreal, they lose to Montreal at home, you're going to really see some stuff. Now, 0-3, some people may think, well, you know, it's not a big deal. But it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're going to move on to the Mike Commodore situation. In case you're unfamiliar with this, Mike Commodore apparently does not really like Mike Babcock, and his scenes doesn't seems to not have a problem letting the world know about it. Dan and I personally had a very enjoyable afternoon reading his tweets, but we're going to go ahead and play a WAV file that's going to set this up.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding, and even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, of good or evil, right or wrong. I met this six-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
What do we do?
He's been here once tonight. I think he'll come back.
And boy, had Mike Commodore been there and come back then and then some. All right, so in case you missed it, here's the deal. Mike Commodore, obviously we all know he played in Calgary, Carolina, Detroit. He has played all over the NHL. For whatever the case may be, he does not like Mike Babcock for any reason whatsoever. Dan is going to pull up some of the tweets here. If he hasn't, did Mike take them down yet?
No.
No? At one point he had made a comment that he thought he was hacked, and he said, oh, wait, I haven't been hacked. So he was verifying that everything that he was saying was fairly legitimate. Is this it? All right. Dan's already laughing. Okay. Mike Commodore, it starts off where I think that I don't know specifically what happened, but there are some players in the NHL that just cannot get along with Mike Babcock. One of the first things he said was, and you can go fuck yourself. You're an ugly fuck. Of course, he's talking about former Detroit coach and now Toronto coach Mike Babcock. The second tweet, which happened just moments later, was, Mike Babcock will be living proof that pieces of shit get into the Hall of Fame. Followed by, folks, it's a record-setting night in Detroit. I will never say why, but it's a record. Commodore, wait a second. I haven't been hacked. Mike Babcock is a piece of shit. Go Wings. And then he just sort of begins to go on a massive, massive hate speech. He makes reference to Babcock being in the hospital, dying. I don't know where this is coming from, but. And he says, I wouldn't even take the time to show up. I would pay the nurse to spit in his face as he died. Mike Commodore to Myrtle. Steve Myrtle from, was it NHL.com?
Yeah, I believe so.
Cup champ, world champ, national champ. Kiss my ass and go fuck yourself. Mike Commodore to Mike Babcock. Go out and go fuck your hat. And it just keeps going on and on and on. Go fuck yourself. Fuck off, slick. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the point of the matter is he seems to take a stance with Babcock that he thinks Babcock is overhyped, overpaid, and probably not as good a coach as people suspect. And Babcock has long been known as not necessarily being a player's coach, but being a smart coach at the same time, always seeming to never budge on his systems, which seem to be very annoying to many players. So Mike Commodore went absolutely apeshit on Twitter, and I believe his followers jumped up by 23,000 after those rants that afternoon. And he didn't keep going. He kept going because he ended up going to Carolina that night to see a Carolina game. Carolina flew him out, put him up in the owner's suites, and he proceeded to tweet shit about Mike Babcock all night from the suite while he was drinking beer. So apparently Mike Commodore is having a very, very good post-career, and he apparently doesn't like Babcock, and I guess he's in his right. But if you haven't seen it, go to @commie22 on Twitter and check out some of his tweets. It's kind of funny. It's not often you see an NHL player that really just doesn't give a shit and puts it out there. And I still want to know exactly what he did. Because that's just not hatred for his system. That's hatred for a whole bunch of other stuff. Maybe he, like, shaved his pubes and threw it in his soup or something. I don't know. Anyhow, that's the Mike Connery situation. We've got about 25 minutes left. You can call in at 323-642-1216. Here's a question. What do the Pens need to do, or what more specifically than that, what's going to make this Pittsburgh team better?
Wow. That's a big question right there with a lot of answers. They have to get back to basics. You have to get back to readjusting your lines. I get it. It's only this. Try to adjust your lines to where there could be some continuity. You build off each other's strengths. Defensive pairings, you have to realign those. You can't have Lovejoy and Scary ranked up with two guys who are a part of your future, knowing well that Lovejoy and Scary, God bless them, are not as fast as they used to be. It goes back to age again. And to that point, Lovejoy, when he was first with the Penguins at one point, was the seventh defenseman. He was usually one of the healthy scratches that we would see on the AGH, you know, healthy scratches part of the injury report. But the four lines up front have to be adjusted. You have to put people on lines and make sure that they work. And for the love of crying out loud, more than one line for scoring. That is important. Defense has to get back to basics. Defend the blue zone. Defend the blue area. Protect the net. Do not leave open gaps for people to drive in and take advantage of your goaltender. You keep doing that, and with one line scoring, it's going to be a miserable year unless adjustments are made. They're easy adjustments. They're pretty basic in nature. But finding the right chemistry flow, though, that will take time, but it has to be done imperatively, point blank.
One of the things that I like to say about this defense is that they're defensive ghosts. You know they're there, but you never know where they're going to be. You can hear them and see them, but they can't really do anything to you. You know, and that's the way I tend to look at the defense. In my opinion, what I think the Penguins really do need, you can have all the players you want. You can have all the different pairings you want. You can have all the different skill levels. You need a coach who's going to break out the whip and crack it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson's not that guy.
Nope.
Tockett, I think, is. Agnew definitely isn't. Agnew's the type that licks the chalkboard. You know what I mean? And I don't.
Yeah.
I just think that Johnston, I don't know if it's just that he looks lost or he is lost. He just doesn't seem to be able to, like, taking Perron, who makes $4.5 million, 4.7 with his bonus, and you put him on the fourth line, and you ship him up to the power play, then to the third, and that doesn't work. So then you take Plotkinov from the second line and put him down to the third, and it seems to create a little bit of offense. You know, second game to the season, you still don't, you don't score any goals. You score one, Kessel, okay? So in two games, one goal. Crosby doesn't have any shots or shot attempts. That's a problem.
Yeah.
That was a big problem last season, and we talked about that all through the summer, that all of Crosby's numbers on the whole were down. And that's just the way it appears to be. You can call in at 323-642-1216, unless, of course, you're watching Toronto getting their ass kicked. I don't even know. What's he got an update? Give me an update on the Major League Baseball score.
Oh, let me pull that up real quick.
Give me an update on that. Anyhow, the next question I have for Dan, but I guess I'll go first, is Montreal the real deal? And here's why I think Montreal is the real deal. They have the best goalie in the league. They probably have one of the more quicker physical teams in the league, and their defense is just great. Now, whether or not they can withstand and hold on like they did last season, because they played great all season, get to those playoffs, gets a little sketchy. Now, they made some additions and subtractions, but I think Montreal in the East is the team to beat. Originally, I thought maybe the Rangers, but you know what? Something about, I think this is Montreal's year. What do you got for a game break, Major League Baseball-wise? What's the score?
2-0 Toronto, top of the fifth.
Well, there you go. So that's what happens. I talk shit about Toronto, and the magic weaves its way, and it's 2-0 in favor of Toronto. So I'm sure a lot of Maple Leafs fans, which is really weird, thinking of Canadians loving baseball. It just doesn't seem right. Maybe for Canadians it's weird with Americans liking hockey. I'm not really sure. But anyway, I think Montreal is pretty much the real deal. I think just defensively they're really good. And I think, you know, having Carey Price is definitely, even though my buddy Jack doesn't think that Price probably deserved all the accolades he got. The only thing that I can say is that Carey Price off the ice is an incredible dude. Does a lot of good things for charity. I mean, and kids. You couldn't ask for a better statesman of the NHL. Couldn't ask for a better character guy. A lot of NHL guys are like that. But I would also be lying if I told you that I didn't hope he slipped on the soap at home in the shower and tore his ACL either. I know that's a horrible thing to say. But all is fair in love and war when it comes to hockey. What do you think about Montreal?
Montreal, I actually think, is the real deal this year. You have one of the top goaltenders in the NHL in Price. You have one of the top Norris Trophy candidates in PK Subban year after year. And whenever Subban hits the ice, you know not only are you getting a physical defenseman who scores, but you're also getting someone who's psychological as well. And then there's Pacioretty, and the list goes on. And in the and behind the bench, you've got Therrien, who's not that bad of a coach, you know. And it's hard not to believe in these guys. It really is hard not to believe in them. And I think, matter of fact, I predicted this in my predictions at PensVlogPost.com. I predicted them to meet the San Jose Sharks in the Stanley Cup Finals this season, only to lose in 6 games to the Sharks. Just to give you a nice little input, if you want to see the rest of our predictions, you can go to the website, check them out. No problem, they're there. But there's something about Montreal that tells me that the dry streak of Canadian teams not winning the cup could be coming to a close within the next 2 years or so if Montreal keeps this up. They're an exciting team to watch. Matter of fact, right now they're up 3-1 against Ottawa in the third. But for those who have a chance to watch this team, there's something else to watch. I mean, last night they went into Boston and literally just took over the TD Garden, point blank. They did. And it was something else to watch. But you're not going to get that from a lot of teams. However, we got it from Montreal last night. And it's something to get used to because it's not going to be just this season. This is going to be a progression. And the progression is saying teams like Detroit and Boston are on the decline, and teams like Montreal.
I want to apologize for that. We had a technical difficulty on our line. The last thing that we were talking about was Montreal, and I think they will be the real deal, no doubt. Once again, sorry about the technical difficulty. But it looks like, you know, another interesting question is Claude Julien in the hot seat in Boston? And I think he is, and I think it's really no fault of his own, because I think if you look at it on the whole, I think Don Sweeney really screwed over. I mean, really screwed over that team by getting rid of a bunch of people. But at the end of the day, you know, that's a team that if they end up going 2-9-1, 2-9-2, you could very well see Sweeney chop Julien's legs from under him. I don't think the Penguins at this point are going to fire Johnston unless it gets really bad. And I certainly don't think they're going to be willing to give up, say, a third-round pick for another coach. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, as far as Boston goes, it's going to be interesting to see how well they fare, but definitely losing Marchand is going to hurt. And a little bit more of news, because we're going to get out of here a little early tonight. Technical difficulty kind of screwed up the mojo. But former goon John Scott's in the AHL playing for the Portland Pirates. So it's going to be incredibly interesting to see how long he lasts in the American Hockey League and to see how long it takes before he gets himself in a lot of trouble there. Anyway, sorry about cutting out early tonight, guys, but technical difficulty kind of screwed things up. So hopefully, you know, hopefully come Tuesday night when the Penguins play Montreal, hopefully the Penguins are ready to play. If they're not, and they go 0-3, this is going to cause even bigger problems, I think, for the Penguins down the road. And it's also going to have sort of a spider effect with the Penguins. And, you know, maybe Johnston between now and then, the team has a couple of practices and maybe decides to put Erickson or Clendening in the lineup just to kind of change it up a little bit and give this team some new life. I think if Johnston does that, we could see, in essence, a little bit different of a result come Tuesday night. However, if they do nothing and they go with more of the same, I think that this team truly, at the end of the day, is probably going to be around the same quality that we've seen. And maybe not. Maybe they wake up a bit, but they got to be better. And they've got to be willing to practice hard. And Johnston, like I said, has to be willing to make lineup changes accordingly and adjust and at least try to tinker a little bit. I mean, you're 0-2, why not tinker a little bit? Just to see if you can get a momentum change, see if you can get a swing change. I think the Penguins will come out with a little bit of up tempo. We have a tendency not to get along with Montreal, and it is the home opening game. But I will say this, and there is a warning. If the Penguins lose this game and lose this game badly, I think at that point you're going to see a problem. Because not only would 0-3 not be the way that Rutherford, Mario Lemieux, or the Penguins would want to start this season, but dropping a game in front of your home crowd, especially opening night, is probably not the best way to go. So with that, everybody have a great night. We will see you Tuesday morning or Tuesday night after the game. Have a great night.